Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. I want to give a shout out to Scoop Boot for sponsoring our sold out 2025 Humble Hoof Podiatry Clinic here in Amesbury, Massachusetts this October with Pat Riley, Celeste Lazaris, Dr. Jenny Hagen, and Ula Chanowska. Scoop Boot is a great boot option. They have options for riding as well as now new designs for rehab horses and transitioning from shod to barefoot. I used Scoop Boots when I was first dealing with my gelding's navicular issues way back in 2014, 2015. I even had Scoop Boots on him nearly 24/7 out in the paddock through frozen mud season. And I'm super appreciative that this company is helping to make this clinic a success. So you can check them out at scootboots.com. That's scootboots.com. A few weeks ago, we started a case study series on the podcast where we took real life cases of difficult hoof issues and talked through the case in order to give listeners some hope that whatever your horse is going through, there's somebody else that's been there and there might be a success story there. So for this episode, I talked to Rachel Thompson. Rachel is a hoof care provider out of Georgia, and she started into hoof care because of a horse of her own, like many of us. And I want to talk to her about one of her specific horses who was a high-low case and all that she went through to get this horse more sound and comfortable. If you want to just start and tell us a little bit about how you became interested in hoof care and your journey to getting to where you are with looking at hoof rehab and things like that.
Okay, awesome. So, I mean, kind of a long story, but a common story, I feel like, for a lot of other hoof care professionals is like you start with this one horse that kind of gets you down the rabbit hole. So my older horse, I've had him for about 12 years, I think 13 years this year. And thoroughbred, very typical navicular case. We did all the shoeing packages and would do them, and then they would work for a little bit, and then they wouldn't work, and then they'd work for a little bit, you know, then we'd change it and work for a little bit. And it was always just very band-aiding together. And I mean, multiple opinions and multiple diagnoses and all sorts of stuff. And eventually I kind of just was pulling my hair out, like, this is not keeping him sound. And, you know, the vet and the farrier just kind of said, I guess just pull his shoes and see what happens. And so that's actually kind of how it started, is I pulled his shoes and really had like no resources. I don't ever rehab your horse like that. Now that I know better, don't just pull their shoes and see what happens. Make a plan. But this was maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, probably about 7 years ago at this point. And I was really kind of on my own trying to figure out what to do, researching, and then eventually took his hoof care and his trims over myself and made really great progress with him. And then had a little regression and plateaued. And I connected with a farrier in my area who is now one of my mentors. And she came out and helped me form a hoof, my heart horse. And that's how we got connected. And she helped me kind of get his soundness and rehab to the next level and keeping him more consistently sound. And, you know, then I was just wanting to work with horses. And she just said to me, like, you really need to trim. You've got to trim. I had a couple friends' horses that I trimmed. I was trimming my donkey. I had got this young horse. I was trimming him on my own. And Sarah, my mentor, just helping me with this heart horse. And she finally was just like, you've just got to do this. And I was like, oh, I don't know. It's so hard. I don't know if I can do it. And I rode along with her like halfway through the first day. I was like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to do this.
You caught the bug.
Caught the bug. And I was already super, you know, involved as an owner and like trimming a little bit, just no training or anything like that. And then I went through IDIS program and started my business. And that's what I'm doing full time now.
Awesome. And are you in Georgia?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As I said that, I was like, oh no, she's going to be a totally different state and I'm going to sound like an idiot. But I'm glad that you are where I thought you were. Awesome. Yeah. And honestly, I feel like you said, a lot of us have a similar story. I had a similar story, also a navicular case. I think you know a little bit about that. So yeah, it's those horses that make us, you know, passionate to help others, because when we see improvements in our own horses, then we, you know, want to help other horses that might have owners that, you know, don't know what to do. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so is that the horse that, you know, your heart horse, is that the one that struggles or has struggled with the high-low issues and things like that? Or is that a different horse?
No. So the one that's been struggling with the high-low issues is actually a newer horse to me. His name's Pablo, and I got him about 2 years ago as a three-year-old. So got him as a little youngster and have had him for about 2 years now, about a year and a half, 2 years. And he is, you know, that's I thought I was going to have an easy one this time around, but then we opened a new can of worms.
Yeah, it's so, oh my goodness. I actually know that feeling, because when I bought my second horse, I was like, I'm going to get a horse that has no issues, because I can't, you know, I don't want to have to come home from rehabbing hooves and rehab another horse and then issues popped up.
Yep. And it's like, I feel like the more you learn, the more you see, and the more you're looking at the whole horse, you're like, oh no, is anything just quite right? You know, like you can look hard enough and find something kind of all over the place. So I was looking, and I you know, as he started growing, I was like, uh-oh, something's not quite right. Something's not quite right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you found this horse, and, you know, it's a gelding, right?
Yes.
And what's his name?
Pablo.
Pablo, you said that right. So tell us how you found Pablo. And then obviously you said that you're hoping to have, I mean, everybody hopes to have no issues with the horse that they get. But did anything present originally, or how things popped up? Kind of lead us on that sort of story.
Yeah. So I got him. He's a thoroughbred. I got him through New Vocations. It was a really amazing experience. So any of my thoroughbred lovers really would highly recommend adopting through New Vocations. But he was about three when I got him, did a pre-purchase. He had great little feet. Nothing really came up. He just was slow. He just didn't race. He didn't make it to the track. He had training and stuff like that. But I was like, okay, great. You know, got him home, pulled his shoes right away. Easiest transition, super easy. And, you know, just didn't do much with him. He was three. So we did some groundwork and some education. And at about four and a half is when we started kind of increasing the work, just some flat work and trying to educate him a little bit more and get him ready to be a riding horse. And that's when I kind of started to notice some changes. But when I first got him as a youngster, there was nothing weird. He was, you know, he had maybe slightly different feet, but it's pretty normal. I wouldn't have considered it high-low. He just looked like, okay, maybe he's a little right side dominant, likes to use that right foot a little bit more, but definitely wouldn't have considered him like true high-low or anything like that.
Interesting. Okay. So then when did things start?
So at about four and a half, we started working more. Maybe about 2 months later, after we were increasing the work, just things started to kind of pop up. He was not picking up his left lead no matter what we were trying. And he was very different going left versus going right. Like going right, he was really coming along, like felt very educated, relaxed, very through, correct. And to the left, he just was like, I was like, oh gosh, this is terrible. He couldn't steer. He could not bend. He couldn't, he just was really struggling to the left, and it was getting kind of worse and worse. And then this very interesting, almost like bridle lameness or like hopping lameness kind of came up going to the left. And it was very positional. Like it wouldn't happen all the time. It would only happen occasionally. Some days were better than others. And that's when I was just like, something's really not right. And he wasn't even picking up the left lead out in the pasture, but he wasn't truly lame. Like you could trot him on a straight line. You could trot him on the lunge and he was okay. You know, especially on the straight line, he was sound. So, you know, started working with my vet. Well, so I'll kind of stop there, but that's kind of when things started coming up. It just, he really was just so stuck through the left side. And then the whole while, you know, I'm doing his trimming and I just feel like he really looks like a high-low horse now. Like that right foot is just pancaking despite it never really being a pancake foot before. And the left foot, the high foot is just like drawing up and up. And I'm like, really trying to fix it through the trim. And every time I turn around, it looks worse and worse. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I missing here? You know? And that's when I kind of figured like, okay, I'm trying to do what I can with the trim. but something's not right in the body, and it's showing up in the feet, and it's making the body worse. And now we're kind of going down this spiral of he just doesn't feel good. He's just not feeling right. And obviously something's not working for him.
Yeah. And so do you think that the high-low became more pronounced? Obviously, you're going to talk a bit about what you ended up finding through that. But mm-hmm. did you think that it became more pronounced more when he started heavier work, or just him growing? Or do you think that there was some issues hiding that didn't pop up until he started more work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't necessarily think that the work made it worse. I think it just happened to be with the timing, because then once this popped up, obviously we took our foot off the gas and stopped to work. And it was still a thing. He still wasn't picking up the left lead in the pasture. He still wasn't looking right when we would check him on the lunge line. And the high foot was just getting worse and worse. I think maybe being in more work and asking him to use himself more evenly really kind of highlighted that he was not physically able to. But then, you know, versus him just willy-nilly running around in the pasture, using himself however he wants. But I also think it was just the timing of when he was maturing and the things that ended up popping up and the things that ended up happening. I don't necessarily think it was related to the work.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because, you know, I've had clients who, as they are training their horses, if, you know, the training isn't maybe balanced or even or whatever, that can exacerbate a high-low. And I have seen it come up more once the horse is starting to really be asked to do things. And I know that's obviously not every case, but
no, and I could definitely see how that could happen. But like working with two different trainers and like both very aware biomechanically, right, you know, and riding very fairly and stuff like that. So I just really felt like, you know, it's not like we're just running him around on his head being mm-hmm. like, whatever, you know, he's stressed, he's tense, he's inverting and working incorrectly. And we're letting, you know, it was really weird. And what was interesting is that when we started to ramp up the work, he was doing really good for a while, and then it started to decline. So it was not really the ramping up of the work when he was in the most weakest phase physically, just coming out of being like a little pasture puff, right? It was kind of after he had already been going for a little bit and was getting stronger and stronger, and then it started to regress. And that's, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of things, I believe that like a lot of things definitely aren't behavioral. They're always trying to tell us something. But when the horse had already been educated and he was going well, and then just all of a sudden decided he couldn't turn to the left or anything like that, that's when you know, like, that's definitely something's not right. This isn't a training issue. This isn't him being naughty or whatever. It just wasn't quite right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I didn't mean to make it sound like, oh, you weren't riding balanced, but I wanted to point that out because I think some owners aren't aware that that can affect their hooves, which, I mean, once you start thinking of it, it's like, oh, yeah, obviously, if they're moving in mm-hmm. balance, like their feet are going to reflect that.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, and I think that's like a really important point, you know, and it's something to definitely be aware of, you know, when you're picking who you want to work with and how you're riding and things like that, of like making sure you have a team that also understands those things and prioritizes them, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And so once you figured out that something was not quite right, what was your first step? Like, where did you start in terms of investigation?
So I have a good relationship with my vet, and she had seen him twice, I think, and she had seen some videos, and we just didn't really know what it was. At first, we thought maybe he was just a little hoof sore, so we just started him in his boots 24/7. That didn't really change anything. And then she kind of watched this video of him doing this funny hopping thing, and she's like, yeah, really doesn't look like the limb. And so I felt pretty sure that it wasn't the limb. And we didn't do a ton of diagnostic, probably could have, but, you know, I just... Everybody on the team kind of felt like it's not the limb. So there's something body-wise going on here, just based on how it was really positional and intermittent and things like that. And so my vet, who is also chiro, I think one of the first things that we tried was chiroing him, because I was like, he just feels out. Like, he feels like he physically cannot bend through his left side. She chiroed him the first time. You know, she was like, wow, he was really out, like out. The whole left side of his body was out. Left pull, left TMJ, rib on the left out, SI, just all out everywhere and almost nothing on the right side. So that was really interesting. Gave him a couple days, then got on him and rode him again. And literally he felt like a different horse. I was like, oh, okay. So that's good, right? He felt great. He suddenly could bend to the left and turn to the left and all of that. So I was like, interesting. And then, you know, we were like, okay, so let's just see if we can get him loose and soft through this left side, doing a couple different things. Like I had some, I'm not a body worker by any means, but just did some exercises that the vet recommended, like some carrot stretches and some stretching of the front limbs and things like that. And was doing that daily around his very like light work. And then he felt great for a few weeks and then it would start to creep back in and it would go away. I think at this point, the adjustment may be held for maybe 2 weeks and then he started to feel bad again. And so then I'd get him chiroed again and then it would last for a couple weeks and then it would go away. And we went around with this maybe 3 or 4 times and I was just like, okay, I don't know. And getting chiroed, you know, every 3 to 4 weeks at this point. And I'm like, this is not really sustainable. And I don't think this should be happening. And the vet agreed. So that's when I kind of was like, okay, I need to figure out what's going on. We, you know, did a lot of palpation in the back and the neck. And like, we couldn't really find anything particular that was jumping out. We looked at saddle fit, you know, and at this point I was like, okay, we're just going to take our foot off the gas. We're really going to stop doing anything until we figure out what's going on. And at this time I was doing some time on the Surefoot pads to see if I could find any patterns. I was watching his grazing. I was just racking my brain, like really just watching him, seeing if I could figure out if there was something going on. All the meanwhile, the high lows kind of just continuing to get worse. We tried some body work. That made some small changes, but really the big thing for him was chiro. Every single time left pole and left TMJ was out. And so that really got me thinking about his head and his mouth and stuff like that. And I'm watching him graze. And obviously at this point, he's got a pretty big discrepancy between his front feet. So pretty high low. And he's just like doing the splits to graze, like more so than normal. Do you know what I mean? Like he's got his 1 foot out so far, and it almost looks like he's about to topple over. And then instead of grazing and walking 1 step forward and grazing off of that leg, he would like take a half step and then put that low foot way far out again and graze like that again. He like could not reach the ground on the high foot if he had it forward to graze.
A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 15% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com.
And so, I guess to back up a little bit, he always had ugly baby teeth when I had him. When he first came to me as a 3-year-old, he had 1 baby cap that had been knocked out. So he had like a little gap in his tooth, like the little kindergartner. But, you know, then they started to fall out and the adult incisors started to come in. And, you know, he was seen by his dentist and no issues. And, you know, he just was kind of, you know, maybe a late bloomer. Some of the caps were still in. But then I'm like, just really trying to like study him. And I'm like not able to physically bend the even just a little bit at the pole. He really hated that, bending to the left. So I'm like looking in the mouth and his teeth just look so jacked up still. And like at this point, he was almost 5 years old and he looked like a hillbilly. Like his teeth looked crazy.
Were they just growing in? Or like, what do you mean? Were they Sorry, just describe that.
They had like spaces between all of the front incisors. Some of them were short, some of them were tall, some of them were overlapping. And this all happened really pretty quickly within a couple months. They just looked so like, you know, he wasn't overdue for his teeth. And my previous dentist did incisor work on him, even when he was the last time that he was seen, but they just looked really wild. And to me, it looked like when I'm trying to study his teeth that his little jaw, his lower jaw, was off to the left a little bit. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get him rechecked by the dentist, even though he's not quite due yet. And I also had this theory kind of brewing in my head, and I had the vet out again to do the chiro and recheck him. So she did the chiro, and I was telling her, I know this sounds weird, but I think something's going on with his jaw and with his teeth. And so she's like, no, not weird at all. And so she takes an x-ray. She takes a film of his jaw, so of his lower teeth, of the incisors. And she was like, well, by golly, he's missing adult incisors. So they were not coming in. So he had some baby caps still on the bottom and some adult teeth. But at this point, he was about 5 years old, and they should be in. And they were not, and they were not even coming close to being in. The baby caps that were there were like firm. And so she kind of passed the baton and was like, I think you should definitely talk to someone that specializes in dentistry for this. So that's kind of where, I guess, the next steps came in. So I had my dentist come back out and check them. And she was like, saw the film, and she's like, wow, that is really interesting. And then we're looking at the top teeth, the top incisors, and he also has a handful of baby caps on the top incisors that are not anywhere near coming out. And we don't have a radiograph of that to confirm, but she felt pretty certain that at 5 years old, with no sign of them being pushed out, he probably didn't have adult incisors behind those either.
Interesting.
So she kind of floated his teeth to correct that. And basically what had happened is, because the baby caps are so short and they don't grow and they don't continue to erupt like the adult incisors, the opposing adult incisors, so the top tooth growing down, opposing the baby incisor, it almost kind of grew into that opposing space and locked the jaw into this funny position. Like the teeth were almost like little puzzle pieces fitting together, if that makes sense, because the adult incisors are continuing to erupt to full length. And he's almost got this like little jigsaw puzzle in his mouth of all these baby incisors that are just short and are never going to get any taller. So I hope that kind of makes sense to give a visual of what it looked like. It looked like little, almost like a little zipper of teeth fitting together, but it was off center. The jaw was kind of stuck off to the left.
Yeah. So how would you, like, what did you do from that point? How did you kind of address it to make it so that it's, I mean, obviously that was affecting a lot more than just his mouth.
Yeah. So the dentist balanced his incisors. We extracted two little baby caps that had been pushed forward that weren't actually falling out, I guess because there wasn't enough pressure to push them out. So they were kind of jutting forward. So we removed those. But then she balanced the incisors and just said, you know, he's definitely going to need more maintenance. He's really going to need more maintenance. He's going to have to get done every 6 months minimum. And you're very particular about the incisors and watch that this doesn't start to happen, because it will kind of lock this jaw into place to where he can't really chew all the way correctly, where it's affecting his balance, things like that. So that's kind of the starting point of the healing, is when we figured out, okay, something major is going on with the teeth, and we got it all straightened up with a really good dentist that worked on his incisors and helped him with that.
Awesome. And so is that something that you'd have to just always kind of work on? Like, does he truly not have those adult incisors?
You know, I think it is just going to be a maintenance thing. We know definitely on the lower jaw that he does not have adult, and like he's missing some adult incisors because we have a radiograph of it. There's just nothing there. There's no roots. There's nothing that's about to erupt. So it is just going to be kind of something that we have to watch carefully and maintain. And I guess, you know, just monitor what signs tend to pop up if that jaw is getting locked up or he's getting uncomfortable or whatever.
Wow. And so once you started kind of addressing that, what are some of the changes that you've noticed? And I guess his written work too, but obviously I'm interested in the feet. So I don't know if you've seen anything yet.
So in So I think that was about in January, and it's April, end of April now, that we got his teeth corrected and kind of found a big missing puzzle piece. And I kind of threw the kitchen sink at him as far as trying to get him as comfortable as possible so that these feet would unwind, because they had just gotten pretty severe in the high low. So a couple things that I did to kind of help. And at this point, I'd add this. At this point, with this going on, even coming back off the work and him just resting, his muscling had changed a good bit. He had pretty severe atrophy behind his left shoulder, and then his right shoulder was really overbuilt and just massive. So that was pretty interesting. So in his feet, I mean, major changes. So right after he got the teeth done, I put him in some composite shoes to just kind of give him some support and better be able to kind of trim him and get him set up how I want him and just see kind of what happens, just making sure 100% that everything's right so that he has a chance to heal. And when I did that, his high foot that was really drawn up was in a 118 in the Easy Care shoes. And then his low foot was in a 126. So it, two sizes different.
Yeah.
Very, very big difference. That right foot was just pancaked. And we're in the fourth cycle of that now, I think, third or fourth cycle of that. And he's the same size in both feet.
Wow.
He's the right foot has drawn up a lot, I guess, because he's not only using it. So the right foot has developed concavity again. The toe's been able to draw back, and he's in a 118 in the low foot that's kind of drawn up underneath him. And then just from the photos that I've been studying, seeing the changes, the heels on the left foot have like totally relaxed on the high foot. They've just totally relaxed. So the shape is a lot different. It doesn't look so clubby. It looks like a regular foot now. And yeah, that's kind of the biggest change, is that they were seriously two different sizes by two shoe sizes, and they're very even now, and they almost look like the same foot. They look like what I would expect a horse that kind of has a little bit of a favorite side to look like. So really huge improvements there.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I feel like so many horses have that just like very, very subtle high-low that maybe only a hoof care provider would even notice, where it's like they have that handedness, or, you know, most horses have one way that you're always constantly trying to strengthen one side because they have that preferred handedness. So yeah, that's amazing. And how long were your cycles? Because you said it's been about four cycles that it's really evened out.
I've been doing about 4 week cycles. So just keeping it short, because I feel like the foot is changing so much, like in front of my eyes. And, you know, I just want to make sure that they're staying balanced. So 4 week cycles, and I think we're in the fourth one right now. So he's about due for a reset, and he'll honestly probably come out of them because he's got good little feet. He doesn't really need them.
Yeah, that's so amazing. So obviously, you know, when you get the feet fixed up, is it then just like smooth sailing? That was sort of it, and you didn't have to do anything else? Did you do any other changes to management, or did you still have to do regular chiropractic work? How did that look after?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did a couple management changes along with, you know, work that we had really planned out to help him get more even. But one of the biggest things that I wanted to kind of tackle was this really funny grazing position that he kept choosing to graze in. And I feed my horses hay a lot, and they're kind of have like a little dry lot area. And one of the biggest changes that I made for him was, instead of feeding everything on the ground, I ended up moving to like variable feeding heights. So, you know, I had always thought that it was best to feed everything on the ground, and for some cases maybe, but for his, I just knew that it wasn't beneficial for him to just be spending, you know, 20 hours a day in the splits eating his hay off of the ground. So I ended up raising the hay nets, and I have a bunch of trees in their little, you know, dry paddock area. And so I put them at all different heights. And what that did was it encouraged him to stand a little bit more square instead of just standing with that low foot way far out in front of him while he was grazing. So he's kind of being encouraged to stand more square. And I did the same thing with feeding his grain. You know, I was feeding him in a pan on the ground before, and I raised that, and that helped encourage him to stand more square. And the biggest thing I was trying to do is just get as much time as I possibly could with him standing more square. And I think that was really beneficial in getting him to utilize that left side a little bit more that was so locked up, that high foot side that was so locked up.
I love that you've mentioned that because I can't even tell you, I cannot post a picture of anything on my track system with horses eating without somebody mentioning something, because we have variable feeding heights here, and we have nets that are hung from trees. We have nets that are hung from fencing, but then we also have feeders where they're eating from ground level. And then we have feeders that they eat more from like chest height. And unless I post only photos of them eating off the ground, I have like a whole slew of people that are like, you're feeding the horses too high and they're going to have back problems. And I have a body worker that comes and works on these horses regularly, and they're seeing continual improvements in their top line and in their movement. So I get a little frustrated. I'm like, I promise you, it's not just like, you know, all on the ground or nothing. Like, there are benefits and there are things that can, you know, be improved if you don't just feed off the ground. Sorry, that's my own little vent.
No, but I think that's so important because, I mean, I kind of fell victim to the same thing when I have a really great network of trimmers in the area, and they were like, variable feeding heights, get those hay nuts off the ground. And I was like, wait, what? What about his back? Won't he be sore? And I was really kind of paranoid about it, like, you know, palpating his back every day, like making sure that no one was getting sore over the back, and nothing. If anything, their top lines look better than they did before. And you know, they have a little grass, so you know, they get to choose, right, kind of where they want to be. And in this situation and with my horses, the variable feeding heights was a game changer in getting him to stand more square and just stop that pattern of just only wanting to graze with that 1 foot forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I think this is so important to talk about because I feel like so many people assume that, I mean, if you're, you know, kind of newer to hoof care, you might assume that if you have a high-low horse, either it's something that is wrong with the trim or something that, you know, you just, it's conformational, which it might be. It might be, you know, some horses as they were growing and how they're grazing or whatever. It could be so many things. But I've even had people that have contacted me for hoof care and been like, oh, you know, I had to get rid of my last farrier because they made my horse so high low. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, you know, let's not, you can't just jump to blame the trim because there's so much that affects these feet. And, you know, honestly, the farrier is one of the smallest parts of what affects the feet in so many situations. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to say that there aren't farriers that might not do the best trim, but I think that if we look at like you were doing, looking at the holistic, like the whole picture, then you can kind of like, it really kind of fixes the feet for you in a lot of cases.
Yeah, like I didn't really do anything crazy to just suddenly make them match. Like it was, I set him up, I tried my best to get him set up for success for this to unwind, and it just kind of did it. the body just kind of took care of it, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. How has his training been going since his feet have been more even?
Yeah, it's been going good. You know, we've just been taking it because I mentioned before that he really had, his musculature had changed, so we really took it slow. I've been taking it really slow, just a lot of in-hand work, just trying to get that left side built back up again, where he had that muscle atrophy, you know, around the high foot. So that's been going good. I started adding some ridden work back in. He's going a little bit of walk trot under saddle again, and he feels great. I mean, he honestly looks sounder than he ever has. Knock on wood, right? But he feels really good. He feels way more even. And the musculature has almost kind of corrected itself as well. I mean, I've been doing a lot of in-hand work to try to get that balanced, but I had the saddle checked and she was like, I really can't see that much of a difference between the shoulders. So really pleased with that. And we're not doing any canter under saddle or anything like that again yet, but he's picking up both leads on the lunge and picking up both leads out in the pasture again, which is great because he just wasn't even, I mean, he, you know, before he was like running around going left on the right lead. And we're like, buddy, it would just be so easier if you swapped. But I just don't think he physically could do it, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. And so I guess, do you have any sort of last minute advice for horse owners that are dealing with something like this, where there's a horse that's really struggling going one direction, or you're dealing with some imbalance in the hooves? Anything you kind of want to leave them with?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I think, you know, obviously this is just one particular case of one thing where it was relatively easy to find the issue. But I think it is just a good example of how, you know, the feet are a mirror for what's going on in the body. And also too, you know, if your horse is really struggling one way or another, it's normally not behavioral. Like they're normally trying to tell you something, and it's going to show up in the feet and it's going to show up in the body. And the best thing you can do is just try to find a good team that will help you look at the horse from all different angles so you can figure out what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being willing to share his story. And if anybody is in Georgia, and, you know, what's your service area if they're kind of looking for somebody to maybe help with some hoof care?
Yeah, I'm a little bit east of Athens. So I service Athens to Augusta, and can help anybody in between there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you chatting with me. And it's so cool to hear these stories where horses are doing so much better. And especially when it's something that's not super conventional, because then it helps us to kind of think outside the box on cases that are stumping us. So I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Yes, of course. And thank you for having me.
Of course. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks. You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too, so we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.